Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area inhabited by the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us, seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking. We hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. Today's question is, how can a group of citizens rejuvenate lost housing and community infrastructure, create strong, sustainable bonds within itself, and provide residents with a sense of pride and ownership without relying on government or banking institutions?
And so there's almost this narrative that's been created here in Detroit around the quote-unquote two Detroits, and it's kind of creating this atmosphere of divisiveness that we feel is unnecessary. So we see through cooperative capital a vehicle to enable, again, a tremendous amount of residents to come together to collectively invest and build up our community.
That's Kwaku Osi, CEO of Cooperative Capital, a cooperative private equity fund that empowers citizens to pool their money together to make promising investments within their community.
Through Cooperative Capital, we created a fund where we're enabling residents to pool their money together in one big pot, and as one collective unit, investing those monies in several opportunities throughout their own community. So it's really about creating a situation where residents are able to come together to collectively invest and build up their community in a way that everyone benefits.
Now, you're based in Detroit. Is Cooperative Capital just in Detroit, or is it further afield?
Yeah, so our first fund will be in Detroit, and we're about 3 months away from that being operational. But there are now 19 other communities that are extremely interested in having a fund in their community. And there are many more communities that have recently reached out to us. So our intention is to basically look to launch community-based funds first throughout the U.S., and then to look beyond. Our hope and what we kind of see us doing is, in a lot of ways, the community-based funds we're creating are a replacement for community-based banks when those were a thing, except instead of being strictly a deposit and lending functioning organization, half our fund is dedicated to us lending in a respective community. But the other half is actually creating a situation where residents are able to get an equity stake within their community, which we think has very powerful and positive implications for any community.
Now, most funding operations and raising equity involve high net worth investors, people with a certain amount of income or proven investing expertise. That's not your model. Who are the investors in your fund?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we are really looking to have residents and ultimately residents of a respective community comprise our investor pool. And really the two things we're saying in our model is, you know, one, because there is a voting component in our model, we're basically saying, one, who better to say what should be in the community than the community? But second, when you have this large base of people all collectively investing in their backyard, you can actually leverage that large base of people to activate growth of the investments we collectively make. And so almost like you could think of it like a virtuous Groupon model of sorts. And so our thing is we really want to create a situation where the typical resident could come together with a tremendous amount of their neighbors, and they could come together to do great things within their community. And we felt that there would be not only kind of economic, obviously the root of what we're doing is economic in nature and financial nature, but the bigger picture we saw was in creating this social cohesion and kind of reestablishing the fabric of communities that appears to have been kind of all but lost more recently, at least in the U.S.
Now, this is obviously a cooperative model because it's kind of the residents and the owners, the people that are very invested in what is happening in their community, are
both the contributors, but also they determine where the funds go. How does that mechanism work? How do the people decide whether we should invest in this kind of infrastructure or the waterworks or a park or a community garden? How does that decision process happen?
Yeah, great question. And just to clarify, versus looking at infrastructure projects or something like that we would expect to be kind of handled by the local municipality, what we are focused on is basically being, we're essentially a private equity fund made accessible to the masses. And we're not a true cooperative, as the term cooperative has been come to known from a business perspective. We are cooperative derived, and really, so the way it works is a person will be able to join our fund for a minimum of $1,000. They have to be a resident of the state which respective community's fund will be in. So they can join for a minimum of $1,000. Each $1,000 gets them a vote. We cap members off at 10 votes, no matter how much they invest, so that no one member can sway the whole group. We have an investment committee made up of members that actually have backgrounds in the spaces we'll be investing in. And their responsibility, they effectively serve as a screener. So their responsibility is to review all opportunities that come in, which we have them do independently on their own. They rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. We then take the top 5 highest rated opportunities to share with our full group of investors on a monthly basis, and then give members 7 days to vote yes or no on each opportunity, and majority wins. So a majority in our case is 51%. If it passes that voting stage, then we'll do due diligence. Our due diligence is just to look at an opportunity and ensure that there's a realistic pathway for that respective opportunity to produce at least a 6% annual rate of growth on the capital that we'll invest. If it meets that criteria, then we will make the investment. And we'll essentially go through that type of cycle until the fund that we raise is fully deployed within the respective community.
And what about the operation of cooperative capital? Who is behind that? Who is your team?
Yeah, great question. So you have myself, and my background, just briefly, I started my career at Deloitte Consulting, where I primarily consulted for federal agencies. Thereafter, I moved to Detroit in the summer of 2013 during this bankruptcy. I used to work with Dan Gilbert on special projects at Rock Ventures. From there, I started buying a lot of real estate in Detroit, and then got lured back home to my hometown area in D.C., where I joined a local government contracting firm. So that's me. Next to me is Brian Barnhill, who's currently the chief talent officer for the city of Detroit. And he is the gentleman that's responsible for running our current mayor, Mayor Mike Duggan's first mayoral campaign. And so that's him. Then we have a gentleman named Chase Cantrell, who's also a native Detroiter. He kind of Michigan undergrad, Michigan law, and joined Dykema after practicing where he primarily did corporate law and commercial real estate transactions with Dykema. He started his own nonprofit called Building Community Value, which focuses on bringing commercial redevelopment to the city of Detroit outside of the downtown core, where a lot of that activity has been focused as of late. So he, other than leading Building Community Value, he is going to be the fund manager, kind of leading our Detroit fund, which is called Detroit Community Capital. And then finally on our team is Camille Johnson, who is someone that has been rooted and kind of grew up in the community development field. So she is a Michigan undergrad, Georgetown Law, and community development. She's worked in a couple of startups and has been a consultant, and she's also on the team. So when you look at our team, we have kind of a diverse group of actors with varied experiences, but we've all kind of joined together to do this great thing. And just briefly, we have someone that, you know, is kind of rooted in local government, someone that has a law background that's rooted in kind of community real estate development, community development generally, and then business generally when you're looking at me.
Sounds like a great team. And tell me why Detroit?
One of my honors, I'd say.
Yes.
So.
good. Why Detroit? Is it directly a result of bankruptcy, the financial troubles that Detroit had, or it just happened to be that's where the people were?
Yeah, great question. So it's kind of a mix of both of those things. So first and foremost, we were all here in Detroit, and, you know, I was very, again, privileged to get to work very closely with Dan Gilbert, and while working with him, I got to see kind of the resurgence of Detroit happening before my eyes, with him arguably leading that charge. But I also got to see that there were a tremendous amount of Detroiters that also wanted to participate in Detroit's recovery. And unfortunately, many of them felt that because they weren't a millionaire, celebrity, politician, they felt that they couldn't. And while that wasn't absolutely true, the thought alone was a limitation, enough of a limitation for enough people to even try. And the unfortunate thing of that was there's kind of two things, two negative implications there. One, you have a considerable amount of money sitting on the sidelines here that otherwise could be going towards insurance recovery. But secondly, there's kind of this ill will festering because people are seeing their city, their community, vastly change before their eyes, and they feel they have no voice, no choice on how things are developing. And meanwhile, they're seeing the same wealthy people taking advantage of an economic event they wish they could also participate in, but feel they can't. And so there's almost this narrative that's been created here in Detroit around the quote-unquote two Detroits, and it's kind of creating this atmosphere of divisiveness that we feel is unnecessary. So we see through cooperative capital a vehicle to enable, again, a tremendous amount of residents to come together to collectively invest and build up our community. And what we found is that what's happening in Detroit isn't unique to Detroit. So in other words, this type of activity is happening in communities throughout the nation. So we're starting in Detroit because this is kind of home for many of us now. But as we've kind of embarked on this journey, we found that there's a tremendous amount of other communities that have a similar desire to want to invest in their community. We found the outlet to do so, and so our intention is to become that vehicle for them to do that.
What kind of regulations or financial rules did you have to deal with in order to set up this cooperative? Because this is a little off the ordinary. It's not charity. It's not your typical equity fundraising activity. It's a bit more like microfinance. So what regulations did you have to stick handle your way through to get there?
Yeah, that by the way, was the most difficult piece of all of this thus far. And we were very fortunate that, so as you hinted to, there's a lot of regulation, specifically because we're dealing with the wider population. So if we were just looking at high net worth individuals, a lot of the challenges we had to face would have, fell by the wayside. But ultimately, what we ended up doing after a tremendous amount of research on our part is we found that there was an interest exemption that we could leverage to get started. And so in Michigan, since 2013, they passed an interstate exemption called the MILE Act, which is short for Michigan Invest Locally Exemption. And this exemption enables us to raise money from any Michigan resident, regardless of their socioeconomic status, or more specific to securities piece, their accreditation status. Now, there are limitations as far as how much money we're able to raise in total and how much any non-accredited investor could invest. So that number for any non-accredited investor, the max they can invest is 10 grand a year. And so these limitations aren't ideal for us. However, what we saw was a way to get started. And as we kind of get out there and prove out the model and show people the power of collectively investing their way, over time, a lot of the limitations kind of get a little looser as far as how much money we're able to collectively raise and a couple of other things we're doing. So we're kind of just taking a step-by-step basis in accordance with where we are and our kind of business's timeline, if that makes sense and answers your question.
Yes, it does. Tell me a bit about the community.
Yeah, down the line.
Sorry?
I should just mention, down the line, so right now we're leveraging interest exemptions, but down the line, we'll get to a point where it will make sense for us to do what they have in the U.S., a Regulation A Plus Tier 1 offering, which would be a federal exemption, and that will allow us a bit more leeway and kind of be a give us a lot more flexibility with what we're able to do and where we're able to do it. So we're excited about taking the you know, kind of quote-unquote baby steps now to be able to make those steps down the line.
Great. So a model for other communities to emulate. That's terrific.
That's right.
Tell me about the community building aspect of it. Obviously, if people are investing with their own hard-earned money, and they have some control or at least a vote over what projects get financed, how does that enhance the community that might not have been there before?
Yeah, you know, absolutely great question. That's kind of, I have twofold kind of answers to that, and I want to make sure that I captured the first piece of your question, if you don't mind repeating that.
Tell us about the community building aspect, because people have invested and they have a voice.
That's right. Yeah. So, first and foremost, the way we are structuring our marketing is very similar to a political campaign. So not that every resident will be able to or want to participate, but before we launch a fund in respective community, we don't want there to be one resident that's able to say, I wish I would have known this thing existed. And so what we're doing is a full-on marketing blitz. We're just getting ready to do our full-on marketing blitz here in Detroit over the next couple of months. And we're essentially, talking to different neighborhood block clubs, community development organizations. We're having some of our current investors putting together smaller, more intimate, informal meetings with their friends, family, and associates to get us in front of people. And just it's about getting total awareness and allowing people to know that there is this way for them to come together with a tremendous amount of their neighbors to collectively invest and build up our community. Second to that is this big thing that we found in communities well beyond Detroit. And a lot of communities, the interest derives from the fact that a lot of residents increasingly feel that they have a lack of inclusion and a lack of equity within their respective community. And so there's for this first Detroit fund, our investments will be going towards, it's going to be specifically focused on real estate. And while we wanted to invest in other asset classes, we found that financial literacy was such a huge issue that we couldn't do that out the gate. As a result of that, we're actually working on what's going to be primarily an online financial education program called Get Financial Lit, where we'll teach people the basis of finance and investment principles, meeting them where they are, no matter what level of financial knowledge they have. So we've come up with a smart way to do that in a quote-unquote financially intelligence-adjusted way. But second to that, we're getting started with real estate because that's something that most people understand. The return profiles of that are rather straightforward. And there's three things we're going to do there. One, we're going to be a small equity partner in much larger projects being led by larger developers here in the city and community development corporations. And in that way, we're enabling residents to participate in some of the larger catalytic projects that are happening across the city. Second, we're going to use our pooled funds to acquire properties, have them rehabbed, and put them up front for sale. And third, half of our fund is equity-based investments, those first two things I just outlined. The other half is debt-based, where we'll look to issue loans. And there, we're looking to become a friendlier, more reliable source of debt capital to smaller developers and contractors looking to rehab 1 to 4 unit properties throughout the city. And that way, we're effectively trying to replace all hard money lenders. And so the real deal here is that there are, in Detroit specifically and other communities, there are a number of blighted properties that there are over 40,000 blighted properties in Detroit, roughly half of which have been labeled salvageable, meaning that they could be productive again with financing, and about roughly half of that, so roughly about a quarter, over 10,000 properties in Detroit that we've kind of looked at, and in a cursory view, we see them being in areas that would actually create financially lucrative opportunities. The issue is that there isn't traditional means of financing here, and so what it typically takes is you could buy a property here from anywhere between you can get them for as low as $1,000 or so, but not many people have the additional, you know, anywhere between $30,000 to $70,000 that it's going to take to make that property productive again, to put it in a position where it could be rented or it could be sold. And that's where the power of us collectively pooling monies together comes to the forefront. What we can't do on our own, we can do together. And as we do that, not only now are we making what used to be eyesore properties productive again, we're introducing new residents and tenants to a respective community, but we're also benefiting from the rent income that comes from respective property or the return on investment once we actually sell a property. So it's really one of those win-win-wins. And the beauty of it is that the main beneficiaries of these investments would be the resident investors that actually invested in the fund. And so that's money that is being invested locally. The returns go back locally. There's a lot of research to suggest that this type of model sets up a community that gets more of what they call a local money cycle spend. And having that local dollar kind of circulate many times within a community before it leaves. And this, all that we're setting up kind of in places where it's been done, which aren't too many, but a place that has been done, has shown to be very resilient communities in the face of downturns and such. So,
right. That's a great investment in the community, and it's a revenue generator, and small businesses can participate. So I hear what you say when it's a win-win-win situation. And I like the aspect that it's financial literacy for the residents, whether they invest or not, probably, but they need to know a bit more how it works. Not everybody, and a large majority of the people, have very little financial literacy. They just live paycheck to paycheck, or even worse.
That's right.
So to see even a small amount of money being put to a benefit is a great education for everyone concerned. Are there specific parts of Detroit that you're kind of focused on, or does it, again, depend on the people from Michigan that say, we want to see this neighborhood or that neighborhood or this particular property? How do you determine what parts of Detroit need the money the most?
Yeah, no, great question. We are agnostic as long as you know, truly the role we see ourselves playing is we are the aggregator of capital. And within that, we've then kind of fitted a framework in which these group of residents that have actually aggregated capital from are able to collectively decide on where that money is deployed within the community. And so, you know, as long for us, as far as the money is being invested within the city of Detroit, Highland Park and Hamtramck, which are two towns that are within the city limits of Detroit, we're happy. And we think that, again, who better to say where this money should go than the community at large? So we're leaving it to the crowd in a lot of ways to make those decisions. And we think that, you know, as we continue to show the power of investing in this way, it will spur more of this type of activity, and we'll hopefully be able to basically have a tremendous impact across the full city over time.
What's been
our thing was we didn't want to be divisive and say this is going to be the footprint, which is what we've seen other programs do in the past, and we found that it's just created. It's created unnecessary division, at least in our eyes.
Right, right. What's been the response from the rest of the community, the Ann Arbors, or the, you know, the those beyond 8 Mile Road, you know, the people that won't necessarily directly benefit from it, but are still living in the Detroit area and want to see the city come back to its former greatness. What's been the response of other people in town?
Yeah. So the response has been very positive. In fact, so positive that many of these other communities are now interested in having a community-based fund of their own. And so I think people are just generally seeing the benefit of having a vehicle that enables them. I think that there is there is an increasing amount of people that want to be able to invest in their backyard, but there isn't an outlet to do so or a convenient outlet to do so that doesn't require someone to have more time than they have, more knowledge than they have, and or more financial resources than they have. So again, it's one of those things where what we can't do on our own, we can do together. And I think people are seeing the beginning of a model that we're creating here in Detroit that they would like to see in their own respective community. And so out of the 19 other communities that are extremely interested in having a cooperative capital fund, five of those are in Michigan. And we're very pleased to see that type of desire and demand for what we're doing, especially given that we haven't even launched our first fund just yet. So our hope is that once we actually launch our first fund, many more people will see the benefit of this, and then we'll be well on our way on the beginning of a more exciting journey of actually getting communities to be able to launch these funds and to bring about all the positive things that we believe it can in their respective city and town.
Have you got a launch date in mind?
Yeah, yep. So we are looking to be live August 7th. And so that's about a little over 3 months from now.
Great. Okay. Now, for our listeners, how can they find out more? Give us the website URL, or if people want to contact you directly, how can our listeners find out more?
Absolutely, yes. Thank you. So you can find us at www.cooperativecap.com. That's cooperative, CAP.com. Or you could do a simple search in any of the major search engine providers, Google. We're at the top there. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Not the most active at the moment, but we'll get better about that. And then if you want to reach out directly, you could reach out to me directly at ko@cooperativecap.com, or you could reach out to our team at hey@cooperativecap.com.
All right. I've been speaking with Kwaku Osei, CEO of Cooperative Capital in Detroit. Kwaku, thank you very much for joining us on Earth Matters.
Thank you. Thank you. Highly appreciate it. And look forward to continue to follow your journey, and hopefully you continue to follow ours as well.